There's still time to get holiday ready. Right Rug Flooring makes it easy with next day installation and 24-month special financing with approved credit. Carpet, hardwood, luxury vinyl, and tile. We have everything you need to make your home shine for family and friends this season. Schedule a free in-home estimate or find a showroom near you. Visit RightRug.com. RITERUG.com. Be holiday ready with Right Rug Flooring.
Right here, right now.
Coda has turned up the frequency. Buses are running more often across Central Ohio. Starting this September, you'll see expanded weekend service on the east and north sides, including the Easton and Polaris corridors. Plus, there are added weekday trips downtown from New Albany, Canal, Winchester, and Tuttle. It's more service, more connections, and more ways to move across the city. Discover the enhanced schedule at coda.com/service changes. That's coda.com/service changes.
Spotlight with Stacey Pinkerton.
Tonight we're talking about the brain, we're going to talk about music, and we're going to focus on multiple sclerosis. Two of my guests, which are quite very familiar with, one diagnosing and one which was diagnosed. I would like to ask a little bit beforehand, Dr. Manuel van Marijvic, exactly what is multiple sclerosis?
When we would know this, then I would get the Nobel Prize. multiple sclerosis is a disease of our immune system. It's an autoimmune disease, or it's a disease which modifies the immune system. This is not clear. This is one of the major focus in research. It's a disease in which wrong functions in our defense system are affecting the outer layer of nerve cells, of the nerves in our central nervous system, which is the spinal cord and which is the brain, the so-called white matter, which we need to transmit a neuro signal from the brain to the periphery. And our hands, our muscles, our movements, our sensibility only works in the moment that a signal comes in a very fast speed from the brain to the organ which has to do something. And multiple sclerosis is a disease in which this transmission of nerve signals is disturbed, and this leads to recurrent, relapsing symptoms in the body. This the patient can discuss better than me. I know this from many patients, but I think it's always good to know this from firsthand, how such a disease develops. It is not clear exact what is the major mechanism. There are many mechanisms known. We know more or less 100 different gene or genetic alterations which can contribute to these immune mechanisms. We know several environmental factors. The major topic in research in this moment, it's more genetic or it's more environmental. It seems to go in direction to environmental aspects like virus infection, like vitamin D, like smoking, and eventually many others, too high salt in our diet, for example.
Does this affect a majority of women or men, or and what about age groups?
Principally, it affects the major manifestations between 20 and 50, but it affects also children, and it affects also elderly people, but the highest risk in the age between 20 and 50 years. And these are two or threefold more risk for women than for men.
Why is that?
Not clear.
Well, at least you're honest.
No answer.
No answer.
No.
Okay.
Not clear.
And Ellen,
there's quite often epidemiological aspects not clear why you have such an unfair distribution of the disease. Sometimes we know this because of a specific genetic distribution of the pathologic factors, but in multiple sclerosis, it's not clear why these are more women and less men.
It's just not fair, is
yeah,
it?
Yes, there was a recent study presented last year in the ECTRIM Congress. ECTRIM is the International Society for Research and Treatment of Multiple Sclerosis. It was in October in Paris. There was a very interesting Danish study that the quantity of patients with multiple sclerosis is progressively becoming higher year by year. And this is not because of the number of men, it's because of the number of women. But it's no answer why women have a higher risk to get multiple sclerosis than men.
Interesting. It's a topic that I've never discussed before on the program. Multiple sclerosis, I know, affects a lot of people. And Ellen Varelin, who is here in the studio with us, you were diagnosed in 2012. You were working as a journalist, and then all of a sudden you were diagnosed. How did this happen?
No, I already stopped working as a journalist. I worked in the event scene for quite a while afterwards as well. But that didn't end very well. I worked really hard and then I had a miscarriage. And a bit later, I was pregnant again. And we had a small, a little accident on the high road. But it was just, we drove over a block of concrete, but there was no signalization in a block. So it was just, a flat tire. But all of a sudden, I lost my left eyesight. So I had problems with my vision. And that night we were sitting, my husband and I, we were at a wedding. And I couldn't read the menu when I was pregnant, so I didn't drink anything, of course. And I was like, I can't read the menu. What's wrong with me? So the first 4 or 5 weeks, my doctor sent me to a lot of eye specialists, but they couldn't find anything. And I wasn't really panicking about it. I should have, actually, but I wasn't. And then after 6 weeks, she said, now you should go to the hospital because now I'm really, really worried. And then they took an MRI and they said, okay, it could be multiple sclerosis, it could be a tumor or an infection, a one-time infection. I was hoping for the last one, of course. But they couldn't, because I was pregnant, they couldn't give me any, how do you say that in English, contrast liquid. Yeah, so it was actually after the pregnancy and after the breastfeeding period that they really diagnosed me. So everybody thinks it must have been a horror pregnancy, but actually it wasn't because I was so convinced that it wouldn't be MS. And I didn't research anything, which is very, as a journalist, it's very difficult. But I said to myself, if you start researching now, you're going to make yourself so scared. So just stay calm. And but apparently it's very atypical to get it during a pregnancy. Yeah,
so normally after the pregnancy, because the pregnancy normally protects.
Exactly. Because during my second pregnancy, I never felt better. It was, it felt.
Therefore, we always encourage women to become pregnant when they have multiple sclerosis. They feel better, but they have to know that they have a higher risk to get a relapse after the pregnancy.
Yeah, because after the second baby, I totally collapsed and I had the most severe MS crash that I had. It was really tough.
Attack?
Yeah. I couldn't move my leg, I couldn't move my arm, I couldn't carry my little baby. It was actually at the end of the breastfeeding period. And then, but it was also very heavy because the girls are very close. It was only 1 year age difference. So, it took a lot of my body, of course. And but yeah, I'm okay, I'm quite stable, but I have to do a lot for it to keep it stable.
Ellen, do you notice when these attacks are coming on beforehand, or is it just you wake up and all of a sudden?
I start to notice a pattern, and it's mostly not when you have a stressful period, not then, but then from the moment you say to yourself, and now I'm going to relax, now I'm going to live slower, and then all of a sudden it happens. It's as if the body knows, okay, now it's time to get ill, it's strange, but it makes sense actually as well.
It's quite an interesting subject, and it seems like with a lot of things go in the neurology department, it's difficult to explain and also difficult to diagnose. A lot of diseases are difficult to diagnose regarding the field of neurology. I'm looking at you, Dr. Manio van Varenbeek.
Yeah, but okay, to diagnose multiple sclerosis is a clear program you have to do, and it's not so difficult to diagnose because you have a clear clinical pattern. We have clear symptoms, we are typical for multiple sclerosis. We have a typical distribution of symptoms in time and in the part of the body. This is one criteria. And a multiple sclerosis gets a diagnosis when you have at least two relapses in time separated. Yeah, this is the distribution or dissemination in time. And when you have lesions or symptoms in different parts of the central nervous system. Another name for multiple sclerosis is the disseminated encephalomyelitis. This means inflammation of brain and the spinal cord in different locations. Yeah, and this is the definition, the clinical definition of this disease. And then you do the MRI scan, and the magnetic resonance imaging shows the inflammatory lesions. The MRI scan is the most important test, it's a definite test, and then you confirm this by the lumbar puncture to the spinal tap to analyze the cerebrospinal fluid, which shows a specific immune pattern characteristic for the multiple sclerosis. And when these factors are all positive, then it's a clear diagnosis of multiple sclerosis. It has changed a lot in the last 2 years regarding the diagnostic procedure multiple sclerosis and the question when we have to start the treatment. This was until 2017 summer, the rule to treat patients preventively in the moment that they have at least 2 different manifestations of multiple sclerosis, different parts of the brain, and at least 8 or 9 lesions in the brain in the MRI scan. And this has changed totally today. And today it's enough to have 1 single symptom. The CIS is the central isolated syndrome that has 1 manifestation, one inflammatory lesion in the brain, and a positive cerebrospinal fluid. Then it's a suspicious multiple sclerosis. In this moment, the patients have to be treated.
And was that how it basically went for you? You had a spinal tap as well, Ellen?
Yes.
Okay, and what I'm trying to get to is what brought you here to Spain? Was it because of the MS? Was it because of?
Yes, mainly. We already came here for quite a long time because my parents have an apartment here, so we love it here, and we got married here, and then we were always thinking about moving here, but then the MS just. Made everything go more quickly. So last year I've had a really stressful period. And then I came here and I felt so much better. And I came home to my husband because I was here with a friend. And I said, we just have to move because otherwise I want to be, in life, you just want to be the best possible form of yourself, of course, and if you feel so much better here and you have so much more energy here, then I don't want to regret in Belgium becoming 50 and then sitting in a wheelchair, not able to hold one of my grandchildren in the future. I mean, if I feel better here, we should just try it, and then at least I'd rather regret something that I've done than regret something that I haven't done. So,
Well said. I think that's for all of us, including. If you want to get involved into the program, please feel free to do so. The telephone number here live into the studio is 952-784-4000. You can also send in a WhatsApp, and that's +34 if you're sending in a WhatsApp from anywhere else around the world. It's 34 for Spain, 645-99-67-95. We're speaking to Dr. Manuel van Maravik and Ellen Varellen.
Spotlight with Stacey Pinkerton.
And good evening. If you're just joining in the program, we are talking about the brain this evening. We're concentrating a little bit in this hour on multiple sclerosis, and then later on we'll be concentrating and focusing on music and the brain. I have in the studio with me Dr. Manuel van Maravik, who is a neurologist, and Ellen Varellen, who is a retired journalist who seems to be busy, and now she has Apple for the Brain, who is new to the coast here, currently living here in the Costa del Sol, going back and forth with your work, I suppose, in Belgium.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Yeah. So, Apple for the Brain, what is that? Is that regarding multiple sclerosis only, or is that just in general anything about the mind?
Well, it's about feeding the mind. So an apple for the brain, food for thought. Let's feed our minds. That's as a journalist, I every day I was triggered by lots of interesting articles, and I was working for Belgian television and Belgian radio. So every day I was communicating with people who had interesting stuff to tell. And all of a sudden I was sick, sitting home, having 2 small little babies. So, I was searching for something that I could still do and that interests me. So that's how Apple for the Brain came into my mind. I was like, okay, why not organize events and start workshops with all sorts of topics that interest me, mainly about health, actually, a lot about holistic treatments as well, because I see it now that I have the disease. I'm still on regular medication, but I feel that you have to do that you can do a lot to stabilize it, to keep it stable. And so I always see it complementary. I do a lot of holistic treatments like acupuncture. I eat differently according to my food intolerances. I don't eat or drink any cow milk anymore, that sort of stuff. I believe in it. I'm not saying it because, you know, the disease manifests with everybody. Everybody's unique, so it's you can't generalize it. But I think for me, I found a way, and I still have these ups and downs, of course. But yeah, and that's...
You feel better?
Better, yeah. I feel, with periods, I feel better, and I'm quite okay compared to other, especially physical. But psychological, it's the fatigue, the tiredness, the loss of the vision and that sort of stuff, all the things that you can't see, which are invisible, that's sometimes very difficult to deal with, because it's quite difficult to explain to people how tired you can feel and how the sort of things that you feel through your body.
That's even for doctors quite often difficult to understand.
Yeah.
But fatigue is one of the major symptoms of multiple sclerosis, and most of multiple sclerosis patients are suffering under fatigue.
Yeah.
And this is an aspect to find additional to all the invasive treatments multiple sclerosis patients have to take or should take, to find some alternate, some other support. And a good diet is a very, very important support, it's clear. Good diet means for multiple sclerosis, clear, find the best Mediterranean diet, not so much meat, a lot of fruits, vegetables. Thinking on the vitamin D, which is a special aspect which we should discuss.
Yes,
this is a very one of the most used messages in multiple sclerosis research, and eventually one of the reasons to go to the south.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. I know that there's one doctor who lives in Australia, and he cured himself. And in his book, he says Mediterranean kitchen, lots of sun, and less stress. So here is the ideal place to live.
Yeah, but in fact, many patients come from North European countries to Spain or to Portugal to live here with multiple sclerosis, and they feel better.
Mm-hmm.
The climate and this is the way of life, I think.
Yeah,
Calm down the stress burden, and the stress burden is a clear trigger factor for multiple sclerosis relapses. This is without any discussion.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And we have a caller live on TRE.
Good evening, Stacey. It's Jason again. How are you?
Hi, Jason. Good afternoon.
Good evening to you guys. With Parkinson's and multiple sclerosis, there are some common denominators in the symptoms. And I wondered if Parkinson's, if the marijuana oil had actually alleviated symptoms of this, or have any trials been done with that, with marijuana oil?
For multiple sclerosis. Multiple sclerosis, marijuana is, I think most of multiple sclerosis patients suffering many years from this disease are using cannabis to improve symptoms. We have one officially brand name for cannabis, synthetic cannabis. This is Sativex. This is a synthetic cannabis which is used for the pain of spasms in the body. Very effective as a nasal spray, but extremely expensive. Per month, 600 or 800 euro in Spain. Therefore, it's not available for everybody, and the health insurances are not paying this in all countries. But most of multiple sclerosis patients, they smoke marijuana or they go to the special shops and they buy cannabis oil or whatever which has cannabis in to improve especially the pain symptoms and for relaxation. Yeah, it seems to be there's no really research on this, and you know why, because it's a still more political discussion and not a medical discussion.
It's interesting.
It should be done, because especially in these immune diseases, this is not only multiple sclerosis. I think many other diseases, cannabis could have or can have a huge impact. to make a short excursion. There's another disease, the epilepsy. There's one medication for epilepsy, especially in genetic juvenile epilepsy. Medication based on cannabis is fantastic, highly effective. The young patients are improving dramatically the epilepsy, but there's still a long-lasting unethical discussion, by my opinion, if this should be admitted by the health insurances for younger people below 18 to treat epilepsy. This is a nonsense discussion because these young patients are losing a good treatment option. I think cannabis will have a big future. There are many studies for many other diseases. When you go through the scientific literature, this must be read very critically because you find all different, I think, also politically supported opinions about use of cannabis in medicine.
I think but for also have a bias, and doctors, because of their conditioning and the line they have to tell, also have to project a certain, you know, general view in their profession. Can I just ask you another question before I go? Can I just ask you something unrelated? You know, the brain, can you dismiss the myth? Do we use all our brain power? Or is it a myth that we do not use all the power of our brain?
We use eventually one-third of our brain. The rest we are not using. So we have a huge reserve capacity. And the reserve capacity for our brain is used when we develop a brain damage. For example, stroke patients have a benefit to recover a hemiplegic part of the body, a lesion after stroke, because of this so-called plasticity. This is to train the brain to use brain areas never having used before. This is a concept of rehabilitation. We are using only one third. Hopefully we never will use the whole brain because this would lead to a disaster of the human being, I think. But it is a very important aspect in neurological rehabilitation.
Can I ask you a thought-provoking question? Every other animal on the planet, because nature's very efficient, it doesn't waste energy evolving brain tissue if it doesn't need it to control the body. So my question is, how have we evolved a brain that's surplus to requirements for our body function? Does that mean at some point in our evolution, because it's physically there, it exists, that we have used that brain power in the past, and that's why we have a brain this size, and somehow lost the ability to connect or interact with that part of it? In other words, we've devolved rather than evolved, because the mass and the weight of the brain is surplus to requirements. That's my question. I've got to go now, but I'll leave you with that for that question.
Yes, thank you for calling in, Jason. So that's a complicated question. Yeah. Regarding whether we use all of our brain, I think that depends on some people.
This depends on many other aspects.
Many.
As we know.
The it was a good question, though, regarding cannabis and also with neuroplasticity, which is something that's often not looked at or discussed. But you see that they're more and more every day using these techniques and also cannabis in treatment for different things. It's quite interesting.
The plasticity, we can talk when we talk about the music, because this has a huge impact on brain plasticity.
Yeah. Well, we'll get to that in the second hour. Meanwhile, if anyone else wants to get involved into the program, please feel free to call in. It is 952-784-1000. We have Dr. Manio Van Maravik, who is a neurologist in the studio, and Ellen Varelin, who has created Apple for the brain.
Talk Radio Europe.
Spotlight. With Stacey Pinkerton.
And I hope you're having a great evening. Tonight in the studio, I have with me Dr. Manio Van Maravik, who is a neurologist, and as well, Ellen Varelin, who is the creator of Apple for the Brain. Ellen was diagnosed in 2012 with multiple sclerosis. We're having an in-depth discussion regarding multiple sclerosis and back to the symptoms, and then go on to what it is that has caused you to change your life. Ellen, what were the first symptoms? I remember you said that it was your vision, and then also you had a numbness in your leg.
Yeah, exactly. The numbness, the weakness, the loss of strength in the arms and the legs. But the worst symptom is by far the fatigueness, the tiredness. I remember that I said to a lot of people, you can be tired, like, well, as a woman, you know, as, when you're pregnant, you can be tired, but that's a healthy sort of tiredness. That's when you go from the sauna, or you had a day on the beach, you're in a healthy way tired. But when you're tired from MS, you're tired in such a way that you can't, you know, lights, noise, especially noise of children and nagging, everything is too much. And then on top of that, you can't even sleep because you're just too tired. So I said to a lot of people, I'd rather have something physical, and I still mean that, something with my arm or my leg that people can see, than the tiredness that you have to, because that's really the most difficult part. And also the things that happen, all the invisible things, the anxiety, the ups and downs, the mood swings are very intense as well, because you can get up in the morning, be very cranky because you didn't sleep well, but then you can go in a very happy situation, and then all of a sudden you're sad again, and it's like every emotion is a lot stronger, and that takes a lot of energy away, and you really need that energy. So
it sounds like you're describing a teenager.
Yeah. It's a bit like, but sometimes you think you're unstable, then you go researching, you think like, am I still sane because of, and it happens with periods as well. Sometimes you're, but yeah, then there are times that you just think.
But do you mean menstrual periods?
No, but not, could be like, but yeah, it might even cause it as well. I mean, the combination of all of it. Yeah.
Well, okay. So was this just from one night to the other, or was this coming on many, many years in advance?
Many years. I think the physical symptoms are less, but the ones that are invisible in my head, that's getting worse.
Do you think you have had the fatigue already before the vision, loss of vision?
Yeah, if I think about it, but if you start, you know, thinking about earlier when I was working as a journalist, I had to edit my own pieces, you know, and I already had problems with my eye, and probably I had the MS and already a couple of years, but the accident that morning was just the trigger to,
I ask this by it seems to be that the MS lesions are most patients quite probably already in the brain years before you get the first symptom. And the fatigue could be the first symptom, a long-lasting, slow, progressive symptom before you develop any other symptom. There are many magnetic resonance imaging studies done in medicine. As you know, everybody gets to do today an MRI scan of the brain, even when you have a simple headache or under migraine, and suspicious of migraine or other type of headaches. And there are many studies, brain studies of young patients, 15, 16, 70, because of headaches, showing up already lesions which are similar to multiple sclerosis lesions, and then doing follow-ups of these patients. Some part of these developed later multiple sclerosis, and they have had only once a headache attack and nothing else. So the lesions of multiple sclerosis, these can start earlier in life, between 15 and 20, for example, and then you develop the first symptoms between 20 and 30. But it's difficult to say, no? But it can be that the fatigue is one of the first symptoms. The typical clinical symptoms, everybody can diagnose this. Every doctor is typically first the loss of vision, this neuritis, the inflammation of the nerve of vision is one of the characteristic first symptoms, or directly an affection of the muscle strengths or your sensibility or double vision or whatever. It can affect all parts of the central nervous system. It can mix up. You can have, in the same moment, you can have a double vision, and you can have a vertigo, and you can have an unsteadiness. This can come all together in one relapse. Mm-hmm. And there's more symptoms someone has in the same moment, as clearly as more severe the relapse, and as longer and as more difficult is the acute treatment and the hope of recovery.
Okay, let's... Well, that's a lot of information that seems to describe a lot of illnesses at the same time. It seems like you say it's easy to diagnose once you have this scan.
Medicine is a lot of experience. And multiple sclerosis is a typical constellation. You have to think in other diseases. Yeah, this
so it's like ticking the box.
Klar, multiple sclerosis symptoms you can find also in others in other diseases, and then you must make the exact diagnostic procedure to see is this multiple sclerosis or is this an a rheumatic disease like lupus, for example, or is this an Lyme disease, for example. Yeah, Lyme disease could imitate symptoms of multiple sclerosis, and when you live in Germany or in Northern Europe where you have a high incidence of Lyme disease, and it can be that it's not a multiple sclerosis and it's a Lyme disease, for example. Mm-hmm. So this, every patient with suspicious multiple sclerosis needs a very thoroughly done diagnostic approach. This is clear.
And that's usually done with a neurologist?
Yeah.
Okay.
Nobody else.
Nobody else. And only the best. Only the best. I'm in the studio with Dr. Emmanuel van Marivik, who is a neurologist, and Ellen Varelin. We're talking about multiple sclerosis at this moment. If you have any questions for either of the two, you can call into the studio. It's 952-78-4000. You can also send in an email to studio@tre.radio. And what's up? +34 645 99 67 95. And Ellen, one thing is, you got the diagnosis, then what did you start to do? Did you change your diet? Was that the first thing that you considered your mind? Because we've covered earlier in the program that even environmental factors could also trigger it. And I suppose diet has a big influence on your recovering and how you feel and the disease itself.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, exactly. But I found that out years after the diagnosis, actually, because first I thought I was eating healthy. But a few years later, when I totally accepted the illness, because the first years I was still fighting the MS. And one thing I've realized now is it's impossible to fight it because you cannot win. You know, you have to listen and obey to your body, and that's the only way. There is no other way. So when I started realizing that it's impossible to fight it, I just have to accept it. But because people tend to say that, oh, but you're a strong girl, you're going to fight it, but you cannot cure it, so it's impossible. And then I started to find other ways. I had a very, I told you about it, a very big MS attack after the second pregnancy, after my second baby. And then I felt so low. I was, we had a wedding here in Marbella, and I thought they had to put me in a wheelchair, and then I was going to the altar like that. And I said, no, 150 people have booked their tickets. I have to stand there. And that's when I found my way. I went to a holistic doctor, and thanks to her, I got to know a lot of holistic therapists, and I've done everything, I think, everything that you can imagine. Acupuncture is the thing that works best for me and that I still do. And of course, I changed the diet. I think, you know, that because I researched so much about it, I think that we forget, we're always talking about smoking, which is so bad, and all these things. And of course, it is bad, but we don't realize what we put in our mouth every day, and it goes through your body, how important that is. And now we eat, let's say, for 75 to 80% of the time organic at home. All of us, my two girls as well, and my husband, we all took our food intolerances via a blood test. And so we eat differently. We don't eat a lot of wheat. We don't eat any cow milk, or we don't drink any cow milk, but no cow milk products. I'm not saying that's the way, but that's the way that works for us. Also, with fruit, apparently in the beginning, I had a fruit intolerance because I ate it so much, but we don't realize that there's also a lot of sugar in fruit as well. All those healthy juices.
If it says healthy, don't take it.
Yeah, but even if it's fresh, I mean, freshly squeezed orange juice, we think because it's from fruit, we think we can drink it. But yeah, it's you may not overdo it, so overuse it. So, yeah, we just now we think about what we eat. Also with the girls, we try not to give them sugar, of course, but we go to the organic shop and we find other solutions. And I think, I've also read that if you see on the world map where MS, where a lot of people with MS live, it's mostly in countries where there's a lot of grey, like in the UK, Scotland is horrible, I guess, but also New Zealand, because there's a lot of grey sky there as well, not a lot of sunlight. But also, if you look at the map, there's no African, there are no African people with MS, almost not everybody who lives close to the equator. There's no MS there in Southeast Asia neither. And I think it also has to do with the way they eat, because they don't have a lot of, they don't eat a lot of cow milk products. And I think it's something Western. I mean, here in the States, we grew up with yogurt and milk and cornflakes and all those stuff. And if you, if you have a meal in Southeast Asia, nobody eats that much here in Spain either. Eh? The Mediterranean kitchen, yeah, they have the good cheese, the one from the sheep, and that's
Manchego.
Manchego, exactly. I have a bit of a brain fog today because of that. It's also a symptom of
that's why we're here.
It's also a symptom of the MS. Yeah, but that's my opinion. Eh?
So. The distribution in the world of multiple sclerosis is a very interesting field. It's correct, as more far away from the equator, as more frequent is the disease. So we have in Sweden or in Finland 100 people of 100,000 inhabitants get multiple sclerosis. The sub-Saharan is one of 100,000, for example. But Kuwait, which is a Gulf state, has 80 to 90 per 100,000, like more or less the same in Europe. Why? And this can be that the alimentation, it's a huge problem. In all these belt of the Saudi Arabian and the Gulf states, a very high rate of multiple sclerosis. And the climate, the sun, it cannot be, but everybody lives under air condition, does not
exactly,
go out,
yeah,
and does not have any sun on the skin.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah,
this vitamin D, you're saying?
Vitamin D, exactly. And this is a very important aspect. Vitamin D is apparently one of the most important trigger factor. And it seems to be that MS patient, or we have a higher risk to get multiple sclerosis when we have had in the years of our childhood, in young age, not enough vitamin D. This fits perfect to the North European countries. When someone has a multiple sclerosis like you, and you don't have a high vitamin D level, the risk to get a relapse within the next year is more or less 14-fold higher as someone who has a high level. Yeah, so vitamin D, always to have a high vitamin D level is essential for multiple sclerosis patients, and seems to be a preventive aspect to also in young age to have always high vitamin D, especially when someone lives in these northern European countries. When you mention smoking is important. Why? Nicotine triggers specific immune reactions in the brain, which are able to initiate a relapse reaction. Yeah. Therefore, and the risk when someone is smoking to get a relapse is tenfold higher than someone who is not smoking. But vitamin D is the most important thing.
Okay.
And it's easy.
I didn't know that. Yeah.
Yeah, it's easy to measure and it's easy to substitute.
Mm-hmm. Did you ever smoke, Ellen?
Yes.
And did you ever have your vitamin D checked before you were diagnosed?
Before I was diagnosed, no, I haven't.
No, nobody has done this. Vitamin D discussion is since 3, 4, 5 years no longer.
Yeah. Huh.
It should be over 50.
Yeah.
I live here in Spain since 1989, and I was deficient in vitamin D.
Yeah.
Definitely. Very, very.
Yeah.
Yeah. I went to a great neurologist who said, let's check your vitamin D. And I was very, very deficient. I do take supplements, but yeah, it seems to be the lowest hanging fruit. I mean, it's so easy and easy to check. But as you say, years before, no one was checking it.
Mm. Mm-hmm. And what you mentioned also, this what we eat, what we put in our mouths,
yeah,
this must be, we have to see more and more critical, because all these processed food we eat is not
exactly,
very healthy.
Yeah.
Well, also the animal products of the last week I was covering microbial resistance and regarding antibiotics, and we often talked on the subject about the animals. They're all getting fed antibiotics, and that seems to be affecting our us in many ways, not just against antibiotic resistance, but it's all these things. It's just. I guess there's just too many people in the world as well. Yeah, anyhow, so acupuncture, do you have that once a week?
Yeah. I guess sometimes, yeah, every 2 weeks, but I think it's once a week, yeah.
And then what else are you doing to regarding a type of holistic treatment?
I do yoga. I think breathing is also very important, the way you breathe. What else do I do? I don't know the word in English, but it's called, in Flemish, it's called craniosacranium.
You know, craniosacral therapy.
Yeah, I couldn't.
It's a relaxation treatment.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. So, hot and for rest, I think I've tried everything holistic that's on this planet. I've done an atlas correction. You've heard about that? They correct the atlas here in your. In the neck. What else have I done? A lot of retreats where, sort of rebirthing stuff. And, the emotional part is also, I think, quite an important factor in MS. I think emotional instability, it can cause a trigger. So you must keep yourself in balance. I think that's the most important thing. And the way you do it, it can be playing tennis for someone. But I think it's important that,
whatever it is that you like.
Exactly. But I think it's important to relax. And although that's not sometimes it's not easy because, sometimes when you're nervous, you have a nervous disease, and then it's very difficult to relax. It's something that I experience, sometimes that it's more difficult.
Depression and anxiety are very common additional symptoms of multiple sclerosis. Mm-hmm. And one choice is to take medication, the better choice is to learn techniques to relax and to fight against the anxiety symptoms and not to take antidepressants.
Yeah, but that's what the classical meds in Belgium gave me. And
solution.
They said to me 80% of MS, of people who have MS take it. 80%, I was like, yeah, but that, I don't have to take it because the first medication that they gave me was Rebif, which was horrible for me. I had to inject myself. My whole body was full of bruises. I looked like a junkie. I lost a lot of weight. I had insomnia. Every time that I put myself an injection, I got fever up till 39.5 degrees. And that time I was addicted to sleeping pills because my youngest daughter was 4 months and I was like, okay, it's 1 o'clock. I have to sleep. But the baby, she was going to need her milk 3 hours later. So I was like, okay, just take a pill. And then you have that. Yeah. Although it's only 3 hours of sleep, then you have that sleep. But the quality of the sleep is so bad. You get so cranky of it the next day. You get these brain fogs and it was so bad. And I never, never, ever thought in my life that I was able to get addicted to something. But that during 5 or 6 months, when I was taking the Rebif medication, it was horrible. You get all these, can't find a word when it's a disease. It's common when you get the grip. I don't know in German.
Flu-like symptoms.
The flu-like symptoms. Yeah, this is also a symptom of MS.
Like the grippe.
Yeah. This is also a symptom of MS. Memory loss and words that you can't find.
What do you take now? What do you take now? Which medication?
Now I take Aubagio.
Aubagio.
Yeah. Which is good. Which That's is better. Good, yeah. But Rebif was and I was really offended that time also by the neurologists and because they, you know, you could tell that my body had an aversion against the medication, that it was not good. But yeah, for sometimes you're you feel more like a client than a patient because the medication costs a lot of money. The somebody comes at home and says, "Oh, you still have to do it. Everybody gets it. Take a painkiller, take it." And I was like, okay, I'm going to do it differently. I'm going to do it different. Mm-hmm. I have to find ways to calm myself down. But then when I stopped taking the Rebif and I changed my medication, the insomnia was away and everything went better.
Rebif was one of the first interferons, or the interferons was the first generation of multiples or so-called disease-modifying medication. But by luck, it becomes more and more history, and we have now more modern medication. The problem of multiple sclerosis medication, that is a huge market. It's a huge market for the pharmaceutical industry. It's extremely expensive. You can calculate that the yearly costs of the medication multiple sclerosis are between 20 and 30,000 euro at least. And this is an artificial high price, and this does not reflect the reality of the production of this medication.
So go holistic.
I think the combination is good.
Exactly.
Every multiple sclerosis patient must find the way of alternative treatments to find the best for the body. Mm-hmm. But every multiple sclerosis patient needs disease-modifying treatment. If not, the risk to sit in a wheelchair is absolutely higher.
But what I'm afraid of is that it may attack attack some of my organs, like my kidneys and my liver. If I take this medication for, let's say, 40 years, I'm a bit afraid that my liver isn't going to survive, or my kidneys, or my...
The point is, you must discuss this again and again with your neurologist. In between, there is more modern medication, and we will have more modern medication in near future. Still, it is experimental, not clear what will be the place of the stem cell treatment, but the stem cell treatment could eventually cure the disease. This is an important aspect, because there's an upcoming more and more increasing stem cell treatment tourism in the world. And this is absolutely dangerous, because many patients also with multiple sclerosis travel to Thailand or to, I don't know, other Asian countries, or to Russia or wherever, to get this treatment for 50, 60, 80,000 euro. At the end, they are not better. And they are using stem cell treatments, which are quite dangerous. This is still university-based and still under research, but could be a big hope in some few years to cure the disease.
Okay, a lot of interesting information there. I have in the studio with me Dr. Manio van Maravik and Ellen Varellen. We've spoke this hour about multiple sclerosis, what you can do for it. They're going to stay on over the next hour. We're going to talk about music and the brain, how it can affect and help our communications, our math skills, all sorts of things. If you want to get involved in the program, please feel free to do so. The telephone number is 952-78-4000.
Ability Chiropractic, we believe every child deserves to grow up healthy, strong, and connected to the incredible power within their own body. From infants to adults, our doctors specialize in purposeful chiropractic care that restores balance between the brain and body, helping you and your family live and heal the way you were designed to, naturally. Families across Columbus are choosing to build lifelong wellness from the start. Discover what true health feels like at Ability Chiropractic. Schedule your visit today at abilitychiro.com.
There's still time to get holiday ready. Right Rug Flooring makes it easy with next day installation and 24-month special financing with approved credit. Carpet, hardwood, luxury vinyl, and tile. We have everything you need to make your home shine for family and friends this season. Schedule a free in-home estimate or find a showroom near you. Visit rightrug.com. RITERUG.com. Be holiday ready with Right Rug Flooring.
Right here, right now.
Coda has turned up the frequency. Buses are running more often across Central Ohio. Starting this September, you'll see expanded weekend service on the east and north sides, including the Easton and Polaris corridors. Plus, there are added weekday trips downtown from New Albany, Canal, Winchester, and Tuttle. It's more service, more connections, and more ways to move across the city. Discover the enhanced schedule at coda.com/service changes. That's coda.com/service changes.